Mohammed Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 26, Text 21, entitled King Puranjana Goes to the Forest to Hunt. Puranjana Uvacha. Sadhritva Siksha Dandam Nayunjate Puranjana Vacha Nyonang Krikitya Punyaste Prityaye Shvishwara Shubhe Kitaga Svatma Sadhritva Siksha Dandam Nayunjate.
Accepts a servant as his own man, but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. According to Vedic civilization, domestic animals and servants are treated exactly like one's own children. Animals and children are sometimes punished, not out of vengeance, but out of love. Similarly, a master sometimes punishes his servant, not out of vengeance, but out of love, to correct him and bring him to the right point. Thus, King Puranjana took his punishment dealt by his wife, the queen, as mercy upon him. He considered himself the most obedient servant of the queen. She was angry at him for his sinful activities, namely, hunting in the forest and leaving her at home. King Puranjana accepted the punishment as actual love and affection from his wife. In the same way, when a person is punished by the laws of nature, by the will of God, he should not be disturbed. A real devotee thinks in this way. When a devotee is put into an awkward position, he takes it as the mercy of the Lord. Tate nukang pang susimikshamano punjan evatma kritang vipakam ridva kapurbhya vidadan namaste jivete yo mukti pute siddhaya bha. Bhagavatam 10.14.8. This verse states that the devotee accepts a reversal of his position in life as a benediction by the Lord, and consequently offers the Lord more obeisances and prayers, thinking that the punishment is due to his past misdeeds and that the Lord is punishing him very mildly. The punishment awarded by the state or by God for one's own faults is actually for one's benefit. In the Manu Sanghita, it is said that the king should be considered merciful when he condemns a murderer to death, because a murderer punished in this life becomes freed from his sinful activity and in the next life takes birth cleared of all sins. If one accepts punishment as a reward dealt by the master, he becomes intelligent enough not to commit the same mistake again. Translation again. King Puranjana said, "My dear beautiful wife, when a master accepts a servant as his own man but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate." This verse, of course, as every verse, very instructive. You know, but there is a, I'm not sure, are we proceeding in a logical progression of all the verses? Has this, was the previous verse the 20th verse, etc.? And it's just by Krishna's arrangement. Did I get to read a verse that so fittingly affects me with regard to my fallen nature? Now I need to be justly punished by Krishna, without doubt. So the, of course, King Puranjana, he is every man. As we know, this is the analogy. The interesting, when, where I joined that temple was called Henry Street. So there was the ISKCON Press, and that was just at the time they were beginning to organize the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. They had the trust previously, but still many of the books were printed at ISKCON Press. At one point, of course, ISKCON Press moved to LA, and that became the combined BBT. And we used to there weren't, when I joined, there was only second canto. But they were just publishing. But we used to get the galley proofs. So I remember when this fourth canto came out, we were very much, how can you say, not bewildered, but cautious how to understand this. Because it, usually Bhagavatam is very direct, no ambiguity. But here was this elaborate analogy, simile, how Puranjana is the, and the city of nine gates and everything surrounding this so intricately explained. But here specifically, we see that he's the queen, the intelligence, because that was the analogy that we understood. She's in response to his deviation. And this is, again, this is the living entity's deviation. Not that there's Puranjana and he's some historical character in this case. But directly addressing us, what are the results? So anyway, we see that somehow or other, we have this path to follow. It's been chalked out very clearly by the previous acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada, by all of our older god brothers. You know how carefully we must tread in order to remain ourselves without this adulterated consciousness. We have this opportunity at every day, this structure, these morning and evening programs, this transcendental sandwich Srila Prabhupada used to describe. The fitting bookends to our daily activities. It seems that no place that I visited has such a dynamic program as Sri Mayapur. This is such a special environment. And the opportunity to serve here is the highest benediction. So it's even more incumbent upon us then how careful we have to be with regards to our prescribed duties. What is our relationship? Not just, you know, we have, sometimes we consider these official positions. I am such and such, temple commander, I am such and such, this person. Whatever these designations, these designations in and of themselves are simply just for performing the service. They're not to be worn as some mantle, some badge. That tendency to think that I am actually this title. You know, I am this chair that I'm sitting on, this elevated seat. But I am none of these things. I am simply, somehow or other, by the good fortune of Krishna and the spiritual master, I have had this singular opportunity. It will not be given again. How fortunate in this birth that we've been able to come to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. It's inconceivable. That much more so that one should be very cautious how he maintains his relationship with the spiritual master. The same way one has to maintain his relationship with the intelligence. Srila Prabhupada commented that one has these voices, the right path and the wrong path. They're always there. And in this case, Puranjana obviously listened to the wrong voice. And what was the description? Puffed up with pride and false ego, feeling strong, he took his weapons, his working senses, and his knowledge-acquiring senses, and he misused them. He used them for adharma. And of course, the greatest dharma is the slaughter of innocent animals. So there the analogy is continued. But these innocent animals are also any subject that can be easily exploited by the abuse of power. Because the king has the highest responsibility. He can easily order someone to do this or to do that. There's no question. It will be immediately carried out. So we, in any situation, and of course these verses, Ishwaraham aham bodhi siddham balavan sukhi, that this is Purajana's momentary lapse. He's a great king, according to the analogy. And he's doing everything properly. Of course, he's overly attached to his comfortable situation. But up to this point, he was not demonstrating that pride and false ego, that I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I will conquer all my enemies. But now it was clearly seen. What is the result? That his intelligence became so disturbed in the form of the queen that she became just like Avadhut, not caring for anything. And so this is another indication how the intelligence becomes discarded. And we may not care for it, even though it's giving us so much opportunity, that rather than take up this false activity, that one should strictly follow the orders of the spiritual master. That all these opportunities that come are his grace, how we can advance in spiritual life. They're not just some arbitrary, someone's thinking, oh, I have the choice. What service? I can do this, I can do that, I can stay brahmacharya, I can become grahastha. I can follow my ambitions, I can pursue such an ambitious agenda. But these things are never recommended for those who are eager to stay on the path of devotional service. Here they're called, of course, in the Vedas, everyone knows karma kanda. In the West, nobody understands. But here it's even more dangerous because karma kanda has the appearance of pious activities. It is pious activities, there's no doubt. But these are not prescribed for those who have come to Krishna. Those who have come to Krishna, they understand yaya tamam prapadyante tam sthitara bhajamyam. This is not some mercantile exchange. Prabhupada in Mayapur in 76, he gave one example of a householder who has reached the end of his productive life. And sometimes we see that's the case. As long as a man is productive, he doesn't want to retire. He wants to continue making money. He thinks, I am like here in this analogy, the two pillars that the reins are attached to, these things. I am providing for my family. I am giving charity. In this way, I'm a productive member of society. But actually, he's being ridiculed for his old age. His children laugh behind his back. Everyone treats him with disdain. So then he thinks, all right, I'll go to Vrindavan. My dear wife, my dear children, all this money I've accumulated, 2 crore. Prabhupada used that word, 2 crore. You can take all of this. You just give me 200 rupees for Krishna per month. So Prabhupada said, so what is this? 2 crore, house, property, everything? Family, wife, and children. And for Krishna, only 200 rupees. So Prabhupada said, all right. Speaking in Krishna's words, all right. Then I'm also for you 200 rupees. So this is the key. If you want to give everything to wife and children, 2 crore, and 200 rupees to Krishna, so Krishna is for you 200 rupees, not 10%. So this we have to always keep in mind. Where is our surrender? How are we manifesting so much opportunity? Mayapur has unlimited opportunity for service. There is no other opportunity such as this. So we should think in our hearts, what can I do? How can I serve Radha Madhava? How can I serve Panchatapa? Ugra Nisinga, Stanu Nisinga. Prabhupada said this is his place of worship. So therefore, as his followers, we should be enlivened and encouraged at how much sacred Mayapur is. How much, what can we do? There are so many examples Prabhupada gave. Here in Mayapur, it's like no other. Of course, many devotees were here, they remember the famous exchange. Prabhupada sitting on the dais after becoming disgusted by the condition of one restroom. And he said, I had no choice. I had to rebuke from the it's normally you don't, Prabhupada's not discussing such matters during Bhagavatam class. But he said, I have no choice. No one was doing anything. Such negligence. This such nasty place. This toilet. He says, and if I ignore, that means I am of the same mode of ignorance. So therefore he had to say, I had to speak. But he was very disappointed. He said, and they're getting second initiation. He said, this is very bad. Very bad. Not qualified. So no reaction. If you see such a thing and there's no reaction, that means you are of the same nature. So any place, this temple, any temple, if you see something wrong and you do not act to correct it, that means you are of the same nature, whether it's ignorance or passion. So this is Prabhupada's direct instruction. We have to act. Just like here. Chastisement is described, is proscribed. And Chanakya confirms that disciples and sons must be punished by the spiritual master. Father and spiritual master. There is no question of leniency. Prabhupada's mercy was his chastisement. Ask anyone if they had ever the benediction to be chastised. One time Srila Prabhupada, I didn't get the good fortune to be severely, verbally chastised by Srila Prabhupada. He simply had to wave his finger. But that was enough. Someone's so foolish, all you have to do is go like this. It means no. He says, what's wrong with you? Think, set yourself. And in my mind I was excusing myself already. What have I done? Because I was his guard, I'm supposed to go everywhere at a discreet distance, follow him. When he was in his room, Prabhupada had a room on the top floor of West 55th Street. Karnapur knows, he remembers well. We used to sit there very obediently outside his sitting room. He would entertain guests, we would check the guests very unobtrusively. No one would think we were these innocent devotees, but we were there to guard. If anyone came off the elevator that wasn't supposed to be there, we would take appropriate action, whatever was necessary. And when Prabhupada would come out of his room, he would go either into his bedroom, just opposite the sitting room, or down the hall. There was no private bathroom. Well, it was a private bathroom. Prabhupada had the whole floor to himself. But his bathroom was at the end of the hall. So when he came out of the room, I paid my obeisances, and when he walked, I got up. And I was a few steps behind, and he turned down the hall to go to the restroom. The only place to go if you go down. He wasn't going anyplace else. Some servants' quarters were down the hall, but we had a buzzer, actually. He didn't have to ring the bell. Servants' room was down the hall, he only had to press a button. The buzzer would ring, the servant would come. So I wasn't going, who knows what Srila Prabhupada was thinking, can't speculate the mind of a pure devotee, but I walked to the edge of the hall so I could make sure it was clear, no obstacles, no problems. and I might have stepped 2 feet into the hall behind Prabhupada. Prabhupada turned and said, "Don't follow me to the restroom." And I was like, "All right, you know." I wasn't going to, but you know. But he, you know, he's thinking, you know, maybe these kids are stupid enough to do so. But, you know. But that's the mercy. That he would just even take the time to instruct us, to chastise us, because then it corrects our intelligence. And then I could tell Prabhu, obviously, the next guard who comes, don't follow Srila Prabhupada down the hall. You know. So this is, somehow or other, our intelligence has to be purified. And the easiest way, obviously, is to strictly follow our sadhana. I mean, in my imagination, I could not understand how could someone not take advantage. One of my god brothers, when I first went to Vrindavan to help on the construction of Prabhupada Samadhi, he was so blissful. And he was telling me, he says, "Prabhu, I can chant my rounds. It seems so unlimited in the sense that we were all from New York. We were at that time brahmacharis for many years. But New York is a very congested atmosphere. So many distractions. So much opportunity for maya." So coming to Vrindavan, you felt so relieved. And chanting, Prabhupada had told us that devotional service, so many more times potent there. And we experienced this practically. So when one comes to a holy place, he's associating with the devotees, and he's not doing anything different. He's associating here, he's associating there, he's associating. But in Mayapur, in Vrindavan, in the Dham, all these things are 100 or 1,000 times more powerful. So who will not take advantage? What person, bereft of intelligence, will go hunting in the forest for sense gratification and not take advantage of associating with devotees and attending the powerful programs present for his eternal purification? It is not complicated to understand. So many shlokas are there, but here, everyone has experienced these things personally. You know, those who have come to Mayapur for whatever reason, you are in such a fortunate position. But we have a duty. Prabhupada also told us in so many ways that when we chant, we accept the responsibility to see to the solution in so many ways. What are the issues confronting us? Whether I'm temple commander and my duty is to maintain the cleanliness, the smooth operation, or whether I have some bigger duties, so-called bigger. Not a bigger title, it doesn't matter, but I have more responsibility. That should be the my desire to demonstrate my surrender. Prabhupada, I will serve you more. Just whatever you want. Just give me more service. Up to my capacity. I have so many hours in a day. I only need a few hours to sleep. We're only limited by our own desires for sense gratification. There was one translation, our god brother Sarva Bhavana and Bhumipati, so many devotees, fortunate to have these clear Bengali translations by Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And she won in the same format as Jiva Dharma. This Bhaktivinoda by Bhav was compiled. And one question is put forward in the same question and response format. Someone said, "What is the harm? Is there any harm to the jiva, to the living entity, if he joins the sampradaya in Kali Yuga?" So this question was formatted like this. Any harm? Yeah, some people may be thinking, I should avoid avoid making a commitment. Even then, 150 years ago, so many deviations, so many schisms. So Bhaktivinoda's response inserted into that question was that there is never any harm to join the Sampradaya. But once joining, one becomes responsible to solve any of the problems that he may find or see. Because it is not uncommon. There is always some challenges. How do we protect the purity? How do we preserve the integrity? How do we maintain the ethics? You know, someone can talk a very good talk. And in that same Bhaktivinoda Bhai Bhav, he gives a clear description of Kali Chela. Who is Kali Chela? That person who's marking the body with tilak, but not behaving or acting for the benefit of the guru or the Vaishnavas. Only self-interest. So very heavily condemned. This is the destruction. This is the only thing that can destroy our society. Robert said society can only be destroyed from within. Once we become slack in our performance and our commitment to Srila Prabhupada and his service, then we are like Paranjana bereft of his intelligence. He cannot have any satisfaction, spiritual or material. He's like that riven cloud. What time should questions be proposed? What time does the class continue to? Because unfortunately, I can speak, and that may not be the best. So I should ask for questions, or comments, or corrections. Yes, Vasudev Prabhu, please correct me. Is there a mic for Vasudev Prabhu? Yes. It's just now coming.
Thank you for speaking on these topics, though unpleasant, however relevant and necessary. Anyone would have noticed that our movement puts a lot of stress on the dangers of criticism, almost a blanket statement that there is no good reason for criticizing. But it seems perhaps sometimes this brings some confusion when there may be a need to see things for what they are if someone doesn't have the integrity or the honesty in our midst that they should have. I remember there was a temple I was in where the management has passed a rule that they did not allow any criticism coming from the devotees. It was counterproductive, it was bringing them down, it was dampening their enthusiasm, so no criticism whatsoever. Then it was found that some of these administrators were guilty of, in the name of and under the plea of warning against criticism, they had allowed themselves to engage in so many fraud and is there a balance where we can not only preach against criticism but define things what is criticism and what is not criticism, what is duty to see and to report and to do something about, even though it may bring someone down in the process?
Thank you for that nice question. Let me just read the translation again. King Puranjana said, "My dear, beautiful wife, when a master accepts a servant as his own man, but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate." So in the purport, Prabhupada clearly indicates that we're not criticizing in the sense that, because fault finding, we have to avoid this. It's not there. But the Dati Putti Krinati, these exchanges of love, Prabhupada saying, by love one approaches a God brother. Because ultimately we are all together. We are all serving the spiritual master. This is a great army, Lord Chaitanya's army. I have sons, daughters, friends in the military. They all relate how there may be so many reasons why a war is being fought by the generals, by the politicians. But in the field, the soldiers are not thinking, this is for this cause or this is for that cause. No, they're doing their duty and they're taking care of the men on either side of them. They're looking out for them. They want to know, you have my back, I have yours. My life, I will give my life for you. This is a very sacred bond. Warriors have such consideration. So in Lord Chaitanya's army, how should we consider that if I see a God brother who is straying, and it doesn't take much, after many years of experience, one has the eyes to understand who is following and who is not. This is not conjecture, it's not speculation. Anyone who has ever held any position within ISKCON, temple commander, you read the person who is serving willingly or is serving grudgingly. It is not a difficult observation to make. There's that person, I'm done with my service. Is there any more service? Of course. And then there's that devotee you saw him in Mangalartik, and next time you see him is lunch. Where is that Prabhu? Where was he? Where is he hiding? So such things, but when you find that person, you say, Prabhu, this is not exactly very good for your spiritual life. Out of love, it is not fault finding. Prabhupada said finding fault means finding fault where there is none. And again, it is not a fault to correct someone out of love. It is a fault to correct someone out of vengeance. That is described here. If I'm trying to put that person down, then that is obviously not a Vaishnava mentality. That is another material. And it's offensive. There, that offense is there. Criticism for one's own ego. How can I bring this person down? But how can I save this person? There's no offense. Because you're saving him from a greater danger. That he falls down and Krishna kicks him. How many of our God brothers could have been saved had they accepted that loving association from their peers and not had separated them? And this goes for anyone in any position who thinks, now I have advanced so much, I am too advanced. Now I only associate with my disciples. I don't associate with my God brothers. My God brothers are on a different platform. This is a danger. This is a great danger. This could be one of the greatest dangers to our movement. And somehow or other, one has accepted a great responsibility, there's no doubt. This is a great responsibility on behalf of Srila Prabhupada to perpetuate the parampara. But if one thinks, now I am beyond reproach, I cannot accept criticism from my God brothers, and he is doomed. We have seen it time and again, he is doomed. So what to speak of us in our day-to-day service? That we can't accept a little criticism from Prabhu. Pick any example, whatever it is. If it's done lovingly, who will begrudge? Oh, that class was terrible. How could you even think? I'm sure I'll hear it, but I accept it lovingly. Because I have no attachment in my heart for profit, distinction, or adoration. This is simply a service, if I can help the devotees. So, any other questions or comments, criticisms? Please, Prabhu, you're all my Prabhus. Jai Om Guru Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Oh, one more question. One more question. Yes, Madam.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful lecture. Prabhuji, like in today's time, the devotees who are coming, as it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, the chastisement to the disciple and the son is good. But the people are so sensitive, I mean, they don't want corrections at the moment, but the new people who are coming.
How will they make advancement without loving guidance? I'm a parent, I'm sure anyone who's a parent here has experienced this. That I'm not chastising my children out of vengeance, out of some desire to lord it over. I simply want them to get the proper instruction how to become independent of good character so that they can also serve in the society without any fault. So the spiritual master has a very sacred obligation to make sure the disciples are of the proper mentality, conducting themselves, that in this way there is no disrespect will come to either the guru or to ISKCON. This we have to avoid at all costs. And again, it is not by pointing these things out, we are not finding fault. If I consider, again, the analogy of Paramjana as a king, so in that sense, we can consider ourselves soldiers. If the analogy is there, I have a duty. If a person is derelict, if he's not competent to be there, to guard me or guard his other soldiers, then he should not be in the ranks. He should be in another position. Because he's a danger to himself and he's a danger to others. This is not something that is subjective. It is not my feeling. Prabhupada was very clear. If a person was not fit for a particular position, he would try to rectify. And he gave that to him. First, try to rectify. But if not possible, then he must change. These are his direct instructions. He must change. He must be moved. He must change. Prabhupada said once or twice. In other places, once, twice, thrice, even four, but five times, no. But in directions for management, he said twice. It's not. With my children, I may be lenient to some extent, but even parents have a limitation. They know that at a certain point, they have a name for it. It's called hard love. Hard love. It may seem externally harsh. Tell them, go out of the house. Completely cut off. Go. It's, now you're not listening to anyone. So you're independent, then be self-sufficient as well. Do whatever you like. Don't come back to us and cry unless you're going to come back and again follow. So this happens. And Prabhupada did that. And many came back to Srila Prabhupada after getting this. I remember he chastised one devotee one time. This devotee was even directly to Srila Prabhupada trying to justify how he could eat meat. This is a senior man, a sannyasi, somehow or other. And Prabhupada turned at that time to Gopal Krishnamurti and said, next he will be telling us we should eat stool. Because after all, it's all one. He was thinking, he's become like this Mayavadi. How could he think? How can you make this logical progression from sannyasi to vantasi? So it was very clear to all of us. But many of us would not. We felt junior. We were new devotees. It was up to, at that time, to the older devotees to speak up. And it went on for some time until finally the older devotees said, we can't tolerate this any longer. Srila Prabhupada, this devotee is completely in mire. And what did Srila Prabhupada say? Why didn't anyone tell me sooner? He said, how can I know if you don't tell me? And in the early days, we thought we don't have to tell Prabhupada everything because he knows everything. This was actually, in one sense, a little shock to us. That we have to tell Prabhupada something. Achyutananda Prabhu, formerly Maharaj, who built Srila Prabhupada's Bhajan Kutir, he related to me how on Second Avenue, one devotee, he was supposed to go buy the boga. Prabhupada gave him the Lakshmi. Whatever it was. I mean, it wasn't much to buy Lakshmi for all that time, you know, a few dollars. But this devotee didn't come back. A day passed, 2 days. Prabhupada said, where's Bhakta such and such? And the devotees were surprised. Prabhupada, he blew it. He left. He took the money. He said, oh. He says, why has no one told me? And everyone, and now is the first time. Achyutananda said, we were a little bit amazed. Prabhupada didn't know that. Because this is what he wants us to relate to him. The way we took it is Prabhupada knows everything. There's no question. But certain things he wants us, because he's training us. Do you see this? Can you see this? Now do you see it? And that's how he was training us. Tell me. This way I know you're seeing it. It's not artificial. There are so many stories like that. They're unlimited. Prabhupada came to the Rath in 76. We were building the Rathyatra cars. Karnapur was there again. The year before, Jayananda was brokenhearted. The wheels he created, he miscalculated. He made the spokes of the wheel too wide and they became flat in between. So the Prabhupada was riding on Subhaji's car and it was all thump, 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 thump. The whole route. Prabhupada was furious at Jayananda. Jayananda was, without a doubt, one of his dearmost disciples. And he was furious. I mean, if you saw this exchange, it's almost impossible. Jayananda is a huge devotee. He was 6'6" tall. Huge frame. But he somehow managed to put himself in a position where he was smaller than Srila Prabhupada, 5'3". Just like a small child. And the next year he told me, Hansi Rupa, we're going to build these wheels so strong, they'll carry 10 tons. We searched for days to find the strongest material to get all these together. And when Prabhupada came in, you know, we had these carts, they were all assembled. And there are some pictures you can see. Prabhupada's at the Rathyatra site. These wheels are huge. They're 8.5, 9 feet tall. Prabhupada is half the size of the wheel. And when he came to the site, the first thing he did, he went to the wheel and he touched the wheel. And he said, very strong. And he looked right at Jayananda and he said, very strong. Because he doesn't forget and he's reciprocating with Jayananda. This is their ras, their relationship. And you can see him. That picture is him actually touching the wheel. And that was the point. He touched it. Very strong. Because you know, there's so many things. He could have said so many things. The card. Amazing in their construction. But he has individual relationships with the devotees. Doesn't matter where we were or how we were initiated. If one is thinking, oh, I'm not, I was initiated by letter, by this, by someone else. If we're not taking that relationship with Srila Prabhupada seriously, that is our great misfortune. Because he is guiding us at every step, if we want. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.